right after the WBAI Evening News on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
And this is WBAI New York at 99.5 FM. The time is 7 o'clock. Time, once again, for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse, but if I could, it would. Oh, this is bound for the best, it's best and worst. I hope that's understood, but then you know.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi. Can you hear me? I'm over here.
I hear you. Okay, there you are.
I made it.
Let's bring in the Skype folks. And we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Hello.
We have Alex.
Hey there.
Oh, no, you're not on this. Okay, that's it. That's all we have. That's all we have. Everyone else is in the audience. So, here we are. Here we are, folks. The last show before. I don't know how to end that sentence because I don't know what's going to happen in another week, but I do know that right now we're before it, and it's gonna come, and it's going to be something else. Well, don't be so down. It's going to be good, I think. I don't know. I'm scared too, but yeah. Yes, Alex. Alex, you're not saying anything.
No, sorry about that. I had an unmute snafu there.
Okay.
There was a bit of latency with the mute button.
We've all been there.
Do you really think, I mean, the election is on Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
3rd. Do you really think that we're going to have any idea who the president is by the time it's Wednesday at 7 p.m.?
Well, I'm not sure. But what we will have are numbers from the people who went in and voted on Tuesday. An unprecedented number of people are voting early. We're going to have some information for listeners, local listeners, on that in just a second. So we'll have a sense on what those numbers are. And those numbers are expected to favor Trump. So we might be depressed. We might be depressed Tuesday night and Wednesday because not all of the votes will have been tallied. I believe the early voting numbers will be tallied as well, but the absentee ballots, those take time. And out on Long Island, we're told that they won't even start counting those until 1 week after Election Day. I don't know why, but that's how they do things. And with all the absentee ballots coming in, that could be a significant number. But I think we'll have a sense. I think we'll have a sense in a week as to how this thing is going. If it's going to be a blowout, if it's going to be tight, if we have reason to be optimistic or reason to despair. But, you know, one thing I did, which I recommend listeners do this because it's kind of interesting. Listen to our show. From Election Day, the day after Election Day in 2016. I call that the other 9/11 because it was November 9th, and in other parts of the world, that's how they write it, 9/11, and it sure felt like another 9/11 because it was the day after Trump was elected. And just listen to our mood then. Listen to our listeners. Some very apropos predictions as to what was coming, and I think a mood that was reflected throughout the entire city. I know that was those were in the days. Remember this? We used to drive in to the radio station. Yeah, we used to actually leave our cubicle here, go outside, and then go inside a different place. And that's how we used to do radio. Now we all just stay put. But back then, yeah, we came in and we saw people just walking like zombies and, might I add, driving like zombies too the whole day. Everybody was in a state of shock. And another show that I think people might enjoy listening to, it's somewhat more jovial, is an edition of Off the Wall, the other radio show that Kyle and I do. It's also available on 2600.com. Go to the show after Election Day in 2008. I won't give anything away, but there was an election then, and the result was a bit happier, and there was celebrations in the East Village and all throughout the country. I wonder if things, I don't want to jinx it, but if things go in a particular direction, do you think there'll be massive celebrations in the street? Do you think people will just kind of be breathing into a paper bag, or do you think people will be worried about COVID and staying away from each other? Any predictions?
Yeah, I mean, Gila and I, we had our absentee ballots, but what we did was we brought them in to the early voting location, which you can do. You can just hand it in. You don't have to mail your absentee ballot. If you have an early voting location, you just walk in and they have a drop box for you. But when we got back, I said to Gila, like, I don't know who is going to win this thing. I do not feel comfortable making any sort of predictions at the moment. But if it goes in that way, I think there will, at the very least, be celebration out the windows of this apartment, just in the form of shouting out into the alley. But I don't know, because I would love to say there would be dancing in the streets, but then where can we do that social distanced? I don't know.
Well, you can certainly dance by yourself in the street. Might not be the safest thing in the world, but I think a lot of people will be tempted.
I wouldn't dance in our street necessarily.
Well, you're on Queens.
Because we live on a
Queens Boulevard.
It's a very steep hill, also,
okay.
And just people zoom up it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very narrow street. Like, I would just be worried about our particular block.
The other thing to consider, in 2008, George W. Bush wasn't defeated. He was leaving anyway. His term was over. In this particular case, if Trump loses, he will have been dethroned. Very, very different. People weren't angry that Barack Obama was elected nearly as much as people will be angry that Donald Trump was not reelected. So think about that. There will be attacks. There will be violence. And there will be things to be afraid of. These Trump caravans that keep barreling through our towns, they're scary as hell. They frighten the people who live in these towns. There's a case out here on Long Island. You won't believe this, but Democrats have pickup trucks too. You know, it happens. And there was a Democrat who had an American flag and a Biden poster. She was forced to take down the American flag by a bunch of Trump supporters, saying that's our flag, and she feared for her life. That happened. It was in the paper out here. So. Look out for things like that. It's going to be jovial if it goes the right way, but it won't necessarily be completely as we want it to be. There will be a lot of unreasonableness out there. That's my prediction. Gila.
So this is not necessarily a looking forward to next week sort of thing, but as long as we're talking about the election, I don't know if you guys heard about the election rally that Trump held last night in my hometown, which is why it's kind of on my radar.
There were so many of them. Which one was this?
This is the rally he had at the airport in Omaha, Nebraska last night. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. And the rally made the national news this morning, not just because it was a Trump rally, but because it was really cold uh-huh. yesterday in Omaha, and they bussed people to the site at the airport. And then it took people 4 hours to get back to their cars. 9 people had to go to the hospital with hypothermia.
Wow.
So
they bussed them there, but they didn't bus them back.
They did bust them back, but the thing is, the airport is at the end of, like, a two-lane road. It's very remote, and they couldn't get all the buses they needed at the same time. It was just, it was poor planning. And
poor planning is the subtitle of this administration.
No question. And it's also interesting because Nebraska is not a winner-take-all electoral college state. I don't know if you guys knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow.
And the first time in my lifetime I remember it splitting was in 2008 when Obama won the electoral votes for the district that Omaha is in. And they're saying that it could be in play again this time. So he wanted to go have this rally in Omaha, but then, you know, froze a lot of old people.
Now, this is a hacker show. We spent a lot of time talking about systems. But, you know, the system that is the most broken is the Electoral College system. People from other countries, they don't understand what in God's name we were thinking. Well, maybe back in the 1700s, we were thinking differently. But now it doesn't make any sense. Imagine that. Every single vote in a state for a different candidate does not count if the other candidate gets a single vote more. They all just don't count. I mean, that is simply incredible. If you want to know how absurd it is, South Carolina is the reason why we have Joe Biden as the Democratic candidate, because he won the South Carolina primary and the African-American vote was strong for him. And the other candidates realized they couldn't overcome that. But every single Democratic vote in South Carolina during the presidential election will not count, because South Carolina is almost guaranteed to go for the Republicans, which means every single Electoral College vote. I assume they're winner-take-all state. If they're not, please correct me. But all those Electoral College votes will go to Trump. So not a single vote in South Carolina will count. That's literally what I get out of this. I mean, how does that make sense? it's the most poorly designed system, Alex.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's a system that nullifies potentially, you know, up to 49.999% of the vote in any particular state. And it's undemocratic, it's unprincipled, it's not something the Founding Fathers had enshrined in the Constitution. This is something that was inherently left to the states to decide. And the ironic thing about the Electoral College, to my mind, is that it was created during a time, in the 18th century, where people didn't have national news, they weren't educated, and there was a fear that uneducated people living in remote parts of the United States could potentially elect a tyrant. So they needed to place essentially a stopgap in between the will of the people and the presidency of the United States.
So how did that work out?
Well, now the irony upon irony upon irony here is that the Electoral College is essentially ensuring that we are going to elect a tyrant, and ensured in large part that we did in fact elect a tyrant last time. I mean, the issue has been raised, and I think it even, you know, was an affront to the Founding Fathers as early as the 1820s. If you look at the historical records when it comes to the Electoral College, and it was horrifying to many of the Founding Fathers because of the very fact that it nullified the will of the people to such a large extent. It makes their votes not count. Right. I mean, and it works both ways for states like New York, where, you know, we are sure to vote blue. All of our Electoral College votes are certain to go to Joe Biden or whomever the Democratic candidate is. But all of those Republican votes are then nullified.
Right.
So it does, in fact, work both ways. It's just that in 2016, the Electoral College votes certainly did not match up to the will of the people by 3 million votes. Up until that point, though, you know, you usually saw, with the exception of 2000, the popular vote and the electoral votes going to the same candidate, right? I mean, and it's not until both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, I think, feel the pain of the will of the people being nullified by the Electoral College that we're going to see meaningful reform here. And there are some really great proposals to change this that have been put on the books, But, you know, I want to pause and give other people a chance to speak on this issue. But I think for numerous reasons, those proposals have just failed.
I just want to say 1992, 1996, 2000, 2008, 2012, and 2016, the Democrats won the popular vote in the presidential election. Doesn't feel like we've had Democratic presidents for all those years. But that's how incredibly broken the system is. So how do we fix the system? We're talking about, you know, we're running Windows 3.1 now, and we're in desperate need of an update. But even an update's not going to help us at this point. We need a complete redesign and an update for the times we live in now. We have a system where we're virtually assured against that even being possible. You have to get, three-quarters of the House, three-quarters of the Senate, and two-thirds of the states? And that's not going to happen. There's just simply no way that many people, people from both parties will go along with a change. So I don't see an answer, the way the system is designed. Alex, do you?
Yeah, there is an answer, and it's on the books in many states already. Off the top of my head, obviously, I didn't know we were going to go into this in depth. I looked it up, but there is a pact. I think it's the National Popular Vote Electoral College Pact or something
Interstate.
Like that.
You're talking about for the Electoral College. I'm talking about for all the other things as well. There are so many things in the Constitution that need updating. For this, you're right. There is a different path forward, and it just involves states pledging that they will. What is it they're pledging to do? That it will reflect the
it's called
the popular vote.
It's an interstate pact,
yeah.
I think, and I think a lot of this also has to do with the collegiality in politicking, in representation, and what these politicians are to do, and what they in fact end up doing, and whose interests those actions support. And because things are so deadlocked and people are in their corners relying solely on the text of like the Constitution or the Bill of Rights and all those norms that ordinarily are assumed when people aren't in their corners, I think that's also factoring into the ability of a document like this to get the day-to-day operations from a stalemate, which is what we've had for, I think, arguably, I don't know, 10 years, decades, I don't know, that you, depending on how you're looking at it, you could say for quite a long time, that key element, that collegiality is missing.
I think what matters here is that if Democrats get control again, that they play hardball. They don't try and compromise. They don't try and be nice. That hasn't worked, and they don't get it in return. There's going to have to be some nastiness. There's going to have to be some forcefulness, and we're going to have to get used to that. We're going to have to get used to being the people that actually are a bit more aggressive than we have been, because otherwise we'll be taken advantage of just as we've been over the last however many years. It's a lesson we keep forgetting to note year after year. Alex, did you have something?
As Kyle had mentioned, this was a National Popular Vote Interstate Compact.
Right.
And looked it up. Yeah, and one thing I want to add here is that it only would come into effect if a number of states would sign on to it that would equal the number of electoral votes that are required to elect the president of the United States, which is 270. Right now, there are 196 votes in total. So the holdout for the pact are, or rather the holdouts for the pact are the battleground states, are the swing states.
Right.
And here's where you have money polluting the will of the people and our ability to elect the president of the United States on the basis of the majority vote. Because those battleground states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, they don't want to sign on to this because they then would lose all of the money, all of that advertising money, all of the boots on the ground money that is spent during these presidential campaigns on those individual states. And the agenda of the presidency and the agenda of the of both political parties, quite frankly, is set on the basis of winning those battleground states every 4 years. So those battleground states have an enormous amount more political power than states like New York or California or even red states like Texas.
Exactly, yeah. Dakota, there's two Dakotas, four senators, twice the number of California, twice the number of New York. It's insane. These are things that, that obviously have to be changed. I just want to go over quickly for people that are in the area, the metropolitan area, who are considering voting early. You have until Sunday, and the hours differ on every day. For instance, tonight, the locations are open until 8 p.m., tomorrow till 6 p.m., Friday till 5, Saturday till 5, and Sunday till 4. And they open at 7 a.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They open at 10 a.m. tomorrow. And those are subject to change based on demand. I want to very quickly read locations that you can drop off your ballot or go and vote early within that constraint if you don't want to vote on Election Day. Let's start with Manhattan. Junior High School, 143 Eleanor Roosevelt. Columbia University, Russ Berry Medical Science Pavilion, Fort Washington Avenue Armory, the Forum on 125th Street, PS75, Henry Garnett, Wadley High School, Westside High School, David Rubenstein Atrium at Lincoln Center, Madison Square Garden Lobby, that ought to be fun, NYU Skirball Center for the Performing Arts, the Church of St. Anthony of Padua, Junior High School 56, Campos Plaza Community Center, Hunter College Brookdale Dorm, and Robert Wagner Middle School and Jackie Robinson Complex on Madison Avenue. In the Bronx, Andrew Friedman Home, the Bronx County Supreme Courthouse, Junior High School 45, Thomas Giordano, Claremont Neighborhood Centers, Bronx Regional High School, Bronx River Community Center, Columbus High School, InTech Academy, MS/HS 368, St. Francis de Chantel Church, Truman High School, St. Anthony Church, Butler United Methodist Church, Justice Sonia Sotomayor Community Center, that's appropriate, Stevenson High School, Monroe College, Tremont United Methodist Church, and 1380 Parkchester Road. I don't know what that is, but that's an address. In Brooklyn, Cary Gardens Community Center, FDR High School, King's Theater, Brooklyn College, Park Slope Armory, YMCA, Council Center for Senior Citizens, Williamsburg Community Center, Barclays Center Lobby, Brooklyn Museum, Masonic Temple on Claremont Avenue, Taylor Wythe Community Center, Dance Atlantic Studio, PS 68, Youth Center on Harway Avenue, St. Dominic's on Bay Ridge Parkway, 5201 Avenue N, I don't know what goes on there, Our Lady of Perpetual Help, Fort Hamilton High School, Bushwick Campus, IS 33 on Tompkins Avenue, New York City College of Technology, Saratoga Village, Van Dyke Community Center, might be Van Dyke Community Center, not sure, Vandalia Center, God's Battalion Church, St. John's Recreation Center, and Joseph Michio Community Center. Over to Queens, Rockaway YMCA, Resorts World Casino, yeah, vote in a casino, that sounds like fun, on Rockaway Boulevard, Holy Trinity Parish Church, Rockdale Village Community Center, York College Academy Academic Corps Building, that's York College Academic Corps Building, Creedmoor Hospital, wow, you can vote inside Creedmoor Hospital, that should be fun, Korean Community Services on 32nd Avenue, Helen Marshall Cultural Center at Queensboro Hall, Queens College on Casino Boulevard, the Boys Club of New York on 41st Road, Board of Elections, Queens Voting Machine Facility Annex, Queensboro Elks Lodge, number 878, Rigo Center Community Room, LaGuardia Community College, Queens Public Library at Jackson Heights, First Baptist Church of East Elmhurst, Variety Boys and Girls Club of Queens, and Museum of the Moving Image. Staten Island, Central Family Life Center, Ocean Breeze Athletic Complex, Holy Family on Watchog Road, Calvary Presbyterian Church, St. Albert's Parish Hall, Staten Island Tech High School, Our Lady Help of Christians, Church of the Holy Child, Our Lady of Pity, and PS 8 Shirley Solomon. Apologies to people who had to sit through all those names, but I think it's important to get it out there. That's every place in the metropolitan area where you can vote early up until Sunday at 4 p.m. or drop off a ballot. Better to drop off a ballot than to mail it at this point, because we don't know for sure things will get there in time. And of course, Election Day, you can vote at your local polling place. Rob.
Also, just to add to that list of yours, if you're confused, go to vote.nyc online, and there's a thing there where you just put in your address and it gives you your polling place.
I read that for people that don't have net access. I know there are some people that listen to us who don't, so hopefully somebody benefited from that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to touch on, Alex touched on it a little bit, but you were asking about how do we reform something like the Electoral College, the stuff that's not going right, that's on this scale. And the thing that really depresses me about that is that in order to, say, reform the Electoral College, eliminate the Electoral College, somebody would have to win through the current system in order to start picking it apart from up top. So somebody would have to get themselves elected on such a platform, and that I really don't see that happening when so many people so close to the top have these entrenched and vested interests in keeping the system as broken as it is. And I think the only thing that really has any hope of getting through all that is the basic definition of a grassroots effort, where we talk to one another about it. We talk to people we know. We educate our fellow citizens on why this is a bad idea the way it's going now, why it could be, how it could be so much better, and make this something that the people want on such a landslide scale that the people up top won't be able to ignore it. If everyone is writing their Congress person or their representatives or whoever, and you know, of either party, of any party, and demanding this, then they are not going to be able to ignore that any further. And I think that's really the only hope we have. And it's a huge undertaking, and it will take probably a ridiculous amount of time if it happens at all. But I think that's really the only hope.
It's kind of a catch-22, because I think the reason people don't do that is because they assume that they just will never win, and they never win because not enough people are doing that. So we have to break that cycle. Gila.
I do wonder if there's an incremental way, though. I mean, again, to go back to the idea of there are two states out of 50 that are not winner-take-all electoral college states, and they're both small states. And I'm wondering if there's a way, even in a tiny way, to reflect the proportionality of voting, especially if you're looking at maybe a state like Texas, where certain congressional districts may vote in other ways, to maybe not negate the voice of every single person who does. I don't know how much sense I'm making, but even a small reform like that to take more of the temperature of the general populace than to just look at every state as a monolith. Maybe.
Yeah, makes sense. We have a couple of interesting stories that have come in that are kind of related to all this. The Trump's reelection site was defaced yesterday. Anybody catch that? His official reelection campaign website was briefly defaced on Tuesday in an embarrassing lapse of security. As yet unknown attackers left a message on DonaldJTrump.com claiming they had compromising information on the U.S. president. Stand in line. Suggesting a conspiracy theory that TrumpGov is involved in the origin of the coronavirus, as well as supposedly being in cahoots with foreign actors manipulating the 2020 elections. Visitors to the site were encouraged to vote on whether or not this supposed compromising material would be released by sending funds to one of two Monero cryptocurrency wallet IDs, each publicized through the defacement. It always goes down this path. Give me money. And instead of actually using an opportunity like that to say something that might actually resonate with people. It only lasted a couple of minutes, and a post on Twitter by the Trump reelection campaign's director of communications, Tim Murtaugh, stated that there was no exposure of sensitive data because none is stored on the site. And I tend to believe something like that. The Trump campaign was working with law enforcement authorities to investigate the source of the attack. Yeah, I'll tell you what. The source of the attack. Look to yourselves. Look to your security. Look to what you choose to use. Here's some analysis. Donald Trump's campaign website is hosted using Expression Engine, which is a content management system. It's served through Cloudflare's content delivery network. In the wake of the short-lived attack, researchers from web security firm WordFence offered some analysis of how the hack might have been carried out. This is from a site called portswigger.net. Since the campaign site was protected by Cloudflare, the attackers would not have been able to access it via FTP or SSH unless they knew the origin IP. This makes the possibility that the origin server was hacked via FTP or SSH the least likely possibility. While it's possible that a vulnerability in Expression Engine was exploited to deface the Trump campaign's main website, the proprietary software has few publicly known vulnerabilities. Abuse of Expression Engine vulnerabilities, much less zero-day exploits, therefore seems improbable. Now, after downplaying the less likely attack vectors, WordFence concluded that the defacement was most likely carried out after compromised credentials were used to sign into the admin panel of Expression Engine CMS, powering the Trump re-election website. Although compromised credentials are by far the most probable intrusion vector, without forensic evidence to verify these theories, we cannot definitively know how the site was compromised, the security firm notes. So I think that's interesting to be able to analyze this. But what they conclude is that, you know what, two-factor authentication would have helped. That always seems to be the conclusion in situations like this. Rob?
The really interesting thing about this from an InfoSec standpoint was this website defacement was a money-making scam. The voting thing that they invited people to do, to say, yes, should we release this or no, shouldn't, were two cryptocurrency addresses. So it was send cryptocurrency to this address if you want us to release it, send cryptocurrency to this other address if you want us to not release it, basically doing the thing that, like, TV talent shows do when they want you to call a 900 number to vote one way or another. So whatever people voted, this entity who defaced this website was making money. And although it was only up on the web for a bit, a lot of the news organizations, including some mainstream ones, I saw this on KSNT, the NBC affiliate out in Topeka, Kansas, they published screenshots of the website with those cryptocurrency addresses clearly readable. So they are inviting their readers to continue to contribute money to whoever pulled this trick. So it's a really interesting scam because of the scale that it's happening on.
I'll say. Another story, which I thought was kind of interesting, involved Fort Bragg's official Twitter account that was deleted last Wednesday after a series of lewd messages were sent to an adult model. They initially said they were hacked. Well, guess what? They weren't. the tweets were from an administrator and not from a hacker. They said this morning at the initiation of an investigation into yesterday's incident regarding inappropriate tweets on the Fort Bragg Twitter account, an administrator for the account identified himself as the source of the tweets. Appropriate action is underway. Fort Bragg's official Twitter account became the star of the social media platform for about an hour last Wednesday after someone sent a series of lewd messages to an adult website model. The tweets were quickly retweeted by other users and then deleted by the official account. 58 minutes after the first tweet was sent, Fort Bragg tweeted a statement that they had been hacked. Yeah, so, you know, the guy from C-SPAN.
Story. Yeah, exactly.
What's his name?
Steve Scully.
Steve Scully, you know.
Same thing, a couple weeks later.
He did the same exact thing. So, you know, this guy has been suspended from C-SPAN. Are we shutting down Fort Bragg? You know, everybody seems to do this. Whenever something bad happens, it was a hacker. Oh, wait, it wasn't.
Oh, this guy's being soundly ridiculed around wherever, whatever department there, I'm sure, will not live this down. And, you know, as dry as that statement is, I'm sure this is not something that is being taken lightly there.
No, they deleted their account. I don't understand that. Why did Fort Bragg delete the entire account?
They just gave up.
They just delete the tweet. You don't have to delete the entire... What, are you going to burn down Fort Bragg now? Come on. We can recover from these things. Yes, you lied, or you were woefully misinformed, or something along those lines, but we can get past these things, just like we can get past the hacks themselves. When they are hacks, I don't know. I don't understand a lot of how people deal with things. I found out on Twitter, not that I spend that much time on it, and I don't understand the mentality behind what a lot of people do on Twitter. I found out I'm blocked because I found a utility that tells you if you're blocked. It won't tell you who blocks you, but I'm blocked by like 9 people. And I always wondered, why am I blocked? I don't get into arguments or harass people. This is what I'm told, is that when people object to your tweets, they don't agree with you, instead of unsubscribing, not following you, they block you. That doesn't make any sense. They simply make it so that they can't see anything you say and you can't see anything they say, which they could also get if they simply don't follow you. So we have this weird combative atmosphere that I didn't even know I was a part of. If they're trying to send a message, it's not landing.
Yeah, it's like the social media equivalent to frenemies, like people that are interested in you, but only insofar as it doesn't drive them insane and bother them. And maybe there's like a weird sense of power in controlling a virtual representation of interaction with you, even though they can't physically ignore you and give you cold stares or whatever their real world equivalent might be.
Yes, Alex.
Oh, I feel like I'm at an auction or something. I went to scratch my ear, and then you called on me here. So.
You waved your hand.
Yeah, I did. You were really attentive at the moment.
Uh-huh.
I mean, fine, I'll make a comment about your Twitter fiasco. I just think Twitter is just completely ridiculous to begin with. I don't really understand it. Following this and that, the fact that people are called followers and people have this untold power, and judging each other and judging people by their follower counts, just sounds to me too cultish. We're using terms that sound like a cult. I mean, and speaking of cults, just yesterday, the NXIVM cult leader was sentenced in Brooklyn to 120 years in Brooklyn. Brooklyn, in prison.
Wow. Freudian slip there. Yes, Gila.
Yes.
I was going to say, it could also, people blocking you is also kind of a tacit admission of your popularity, because if somebody blocks you, they don't see you if you get retweeted. They don't see you if somebody they know replies to you. It just completely, so obviously this is like, you're following people because people are retweeting you. So, they just want you to.
So these are people who just don't want to see anything about you at all.
Yes, correct.
Okay. But someone could still mention you by name in a tweet, and I'd see that.
But then you won't, though, because, there are people that have responded to a tweet, and then there's something grayed out, and it's like, this tweet is from an account you blocked.
No, I'm not saying the tweet would be from me. I'm saying they would mention my name in a different tweet. If I won the Nobel Prize or something, and somebody who blocked me didn't want to find out anything that I was up to, well, somebody is going to say Emmanuel Goldstein won the Nobel Prize without using my username, and that's gonna get to them, and they're really going to be upset.
It's going to trigger them, and then all hell's going
to
break loose.
Just go and win it now, just to spite them. we talked last week about this this case in Florida where the Democratic voters were being intimidated, allegedly by Proud Boys email saying you better vote for Trump or else. And shortly after our show last week, there was this hastily assembled press conference where our administration blamed the whole thing on Iran. It very well may have emanated from there. Interesting article on Reuters about this. Government analysts and private sector investigators were able to rapidly attribute to Iranian hackers a wave of thousands of threatening emails aimed at U.S. voters because of mistakes made in a video attached to some of the messages. That's according to 4 people familiar with the matter. And those failures provided a rare opportunity for the U.S. government to identify and publicly announce blame for a malicious cyber operation in a matter of days, something that usually requires months of technical analysis and supporting intelligence. Last Wednesday night, U.S. Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe said Russia and Iran have both tried to interfere in the campaign for the November 3rd election. Of course, only Iran is being pointed at because our administration doesn't talk about Russia. U.S. intelligence agencies are still analyzing exactly who in Iran commandeered the or commanded the operation and its intent. Within hours of the video being circulated this week, or last week actually, which purported to come from American far-right group known as the Proud Boys, intelligence officials and major email platform providers such as Alphabet Inc.'s Google.o, I'm sorry, I'm reading the stock market, this news story adds the stock market identifier, Google, not Google.o, and Microsoft, MSFT.o, in case you're keeping track. They began closely analyzing computer code that appeared in the hacker's video. Now, while the emails, which demanded that voters change their party affiliation to the Republican Party and vote for President Donald Trump or we will come after you, appeared to come from an official-looking Proud Boys email address, the address was inauthentic, security analysts said. The Proud Boys denied they were behind the messages, and we should believe what they say. House security analysts used intelligence from the video to attribute the email scheme has not been previously reported. A Microsoft spokesperson declined to comment on the company's collaboration with law enforcement. A Google statement Wednesday night said the activity was linked to Iran. A Google spokesperson said on Thursday the company was in contact with the FBI. Here's what's interesting. Despite attempts to blur aspects of the video to hide their identity, the hackers were unable to obfuscate all of the incriminating information. For instance, it showed the hacker's computer screen as they typed in commands and pretended to hack a voter registration system. Investigators noticed snippets of revealing computer code, including file paths, file names, and an Internet Protocol IP address. Security analysts found that the IP address, hosted through an online service called WorldStream, traced back to previous Iranian hacking activity. They then cross-referenced those clues left in the video with data from other intelligence streams, including communications interceptions, basically they concluded Iran from that. Now, what's interesting about all of this is that that may very well be so, but it doesn't mean that only people in Iran or only Iranian hackers are capable of doing this. Anyone can do this. All of us here can do the exact same thing that these folks did very quickly, very easily. I'll tell you how. I'll tell you exactly how. In Florida, voter registration and voting history information is public record. And I'm reading directly from the Division of Elections website. As a public service, the Division of Elections provides a monthly disk on registered voters. Monthly. The disk contains information extracted from the Florida voter registration system and data reported by the 67 county supervisors of elections. The data includes voter registration and voting information on all voters registered up to the last day of the month prior to the date on the disk generated. Further information on the file specifications can be found in later in this thing I'm reading here, which I'll get to in a moment. Now, in order to receive a copy of the monthly disk, email or mail your request to the Division of Elections before 4 p.m. on the respective dates below. Dates September 16th, October 14th, October 28th, which happens to be today, and December 9th. Please include in your request a phone number, an email address, and a mailing address to receive the disk by mail. The disks will be mailed out or available for pickup from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. on that day. A request received after the date and time specified will be filled with next month's extract disk. There is no fee associated with this complimentary disk. It's amazing. Now, when you get the disk, you get basically a spreadsheet. And here are the fields that are contained in that spreadsheet. County code, a voter ID number, 10 digits. Last name, name suffix, first name, middle name. A requested public records exemption. Yes, you can do this in Florida. N or Y, if Y, protected data is not included. So you can protect your data if you do this. Now, in addition, residence address, two lines for that, residence city, residence state, residence zip code, then a mailing address, three lines for that, a mailing city, state, zip code, and country, a gender, F, M, or U. You have one character for race, one character for race, birth date, registration date, party affiliation. You have three characters for party affiliation. One character for race, three for party affiliation. Precinct, precinct group, precinct split, precinct suffix, voter status, which basically is active or inactive. Congressional district, House district, Senate district, county commission district, school board district. Daytime area code, daytime phone number, daytime phone extension, and email address. So I can get all of this information sent to me for nothing. Anyone can. And then you simply take all the email addresses from all the people who are registered as Democrats, and you send them a threatening email and sign it to Proud Boys, and here you are exactly where Iran is accused of being. It's not that hard. Alex, are you scratching yourself or actually waving this time?
Not this time.
All right.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, and further to that point, if you think about the story attributing this campaign of threatening actions originating ostensibly from the Proud Boys to Iran, I think there's two reasonable conclusions to which you could come just based on that reporting. If this did originate from Iran, the people that did this and didn't obfuscate obvious things like file paths, IP addresses, etc., indicates to me that this is certainly the work of an amateur. Right? I mean, these are not professionals that are doing this kind of thing. And because, another deduction there, because anybody can do this, let's take another hypothetical example. Let's say Emmanuel Goldstein, who has the voter registration database of people in Florida, does the reverse of this, starts sending threatening emails to all the Republicans in Dade County, Florida.
Damn it, you ruined the whole thing. What did you go and say that for?
Let's choose a different county then.
Yeah, that please, just not Dade County.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what Broward County. That's
thank
another
you.
One.
Thank you. Yeah, okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, or Hudson. You know, there's quite a few I remember. Anyhow, let's use Broward County, right? You send these threatening emails over there. You get caught because you did something stupid. You showed them that, you know, this was originating from your false Linux server. Would we then, you know, attribute this, or let's say, actually, here's a totally different hypothetical. Let's say you tried to influence a UK election instead of the voters in Florida, right? And you got caught. Same set of facts. Would the UK then say this is an attributed action to the United States of America?
Yeah, it's interesting. Would they blame the regime, or would they blame the individual?
You should blame the individual, because the individual is an idiot.
Right.
The idiot does not necessarily match up with the stance or the attitude of the government.
Well, the government. You make a very good point here. And recall, in that story, Russia was also implicated, but Russia was never mentioned again. Iran is being mentioned because it's in the interest of this administration to blame it on Iran.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that's yeah, definitely another valid deduction, I think, to take away from that. And to the other point, you know, that all of this information is available in the voter registration databases. You know, I am constantly bombarded by Democrats texting me from the Biden campaign, texting me from whoever, you know, the local candidates are, asking me if I'm registered to vote, asking me if I want to enter into some kind of dialogue, asking me if I'm going to watch the debates that particular night. And frankly, it's really annoying. And my response to all of them, and I'm a Democrat, is, from where did you get my telephone number?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know. And they always take a while to get back to, but ultimately they'll respond and they'll tell you they got the information from the voter registration rolls. Now, I looked up whether or not...
Wait, the phone numbers are... New York State phone numbers are not part of the voter registration rolls.
That's correct. That is correct. So I always press them on this, and I let them know specifically that my cell phone number is not part of the voter registration rolls, so I want to know exactly where they got this from. And they can never get an answer. You never get an answer out of any... So
I've noticed the same thing. I've gotten text messages from local candidates on both sides using the name that is associated with my phone. So that's interesting.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting, especially when you consider the fact that I had an issue with my voter registration. If you recall, there was a typo in my last name, and we talked about it
length
several weeks ago or months ago. And I always ask them, well, what's the name you have in the voter registration information, you know, from which you're texting me, because I want to make sure I can vote, and I think there's a typo on my name, and they never tell you. They never tell you. So there's something sketchy going on. Both sides of the aisle are taking data from the voter registration databases and combining it with other data sources. That's what they have to be doing in some manner that may, you know, be unethical. And they're using it to get out the vote, which I guess is an ethical thing, but to use an unethical means to do an ethical thing is still unethical, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's unethical on a massive scale, not specific to a particular campaign. I think this is what everybody is doing. This is now the norm, and that is what's unethical. We need to find out exactly how they're doing this. Well, one thing, though, I am being relentlessly spammed by something called Trump Talk. I'm being invited to armyfortrump.com. Now, listeners, check out this site. Go to armyfortrump.com. You can volunteer to talk to people and become a digital activist, make calls on Trump Talk, become a bundler, whatever that is, host a MAGA meetup, become a Trump team leader, become a Trump victory fellow. There are all manner of things that you can do that will completely cause chaos if you don't do them exactly the way they want you to. I won't say more than that, but I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by what it is they're planning, what they're doing, and I don't know why they're picking on me. I don't know why I'm getting all this, but since they're spreading the word to me, I figured I'd spread the word to you and have some fun with it. Let's learn.
And what will happen with all of this infrastructure, I wonder? So many different organizations, especially if there is, as we discussed at the beginning of the show, a sort of backlash and resentment. There's already a lot of language around this feeling of not getting the 4 years that he deserved. This administration somehow not being treated the way they should have,
right.
as is their typical, you know, grievance politics.
They want a do-over. They want 4 more years on time. It's crazy.
It speaks to how precarious a moment it is.
You know, I just realized we have probably seen the last Trump debate. When will we ever see Trump debate again? Think about it. What's the scenario where he would debate? If he wins, he can't run again. If he loses, well, I guess if he loses, he could run in 2024 and debate then. Would he do that? I guess that's possible. That would be bizarre. But, yeah, it's kind of a melancholy note there that we'll never get to witness that fiasco again. Yes, Alex?
I don't know.
Oh, go ahead, Rob.
I just personally, the place I'll see my next Trump debate is probably in those nightmares I'm always having.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that'll stop whatever way the election goes.
Alex?
Yeah, I think people are already preparing for his loss and his eventual run again in 2024. This is actually something that I've seen in the DNS and the domain name system. As you know, we've been tracking Trump related domain names for close to 5 years now. If you think about, you know, when we started this a while ago, it was before he got elected. And we're seeing lots of registrations with Trump 2024.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If he loses and then decides to run again in 4 years, can you run a presidential campaign from prison?
Yeah, well, you're making a lot of assumptions there.
I'm simply hoping for the best. Hey, we're out of time. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for writing in. Remember to vote. Please, get out there, vote. Help other people get their ballots to the right place. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Thank you. America, jump back in myself.